Welcome to Logicgate, episode number 2, where we are discussing the Star Wars television show Andor on Disney Plus. I'm your host, Scott. I'm joined by my two friends, Doug.
Hello.
And Jason.
Hey.
All right, let's dive right in. Andor, season 1, episode 2, opens with the kids from the first episode exploring the planet. They kind of come through a clearing in these trees and they see like a big, hole or a big depression in the ground. And I kind of got the impression it was a mine site. All the walls were, sort of, it looked like Minecraft, like the walls were kind of blocked out, like they had been doing some mining in this area.
So this was just like a continuation of the last flashback scene that we got in the previous episode, like the group was going to hunt and explore the wreckage. At least that's what I took from it.
So I put down it's some sort of mining operation ? In my notes, but they actually explain later in the episode more about what this is. So we'll cover that later.
Right.
But the kids definitely come across this. I was expecting it, to open up and like they were looking for that ship that had crashed. So I was like looking for a crashed ship, but clearly there was no crashed ship there. But there was something there. So clearly this planet that they're on is not completely devoid of people. At least at one point there was something going on this planet that they're on.
Signs of civilization.
So that's pretty much it. They cut from the mining operation to you see Cassian walking through town. And then it cuts to like this guy up in this bell tower. And he's got, I'm pretty sure he has no shirt on. I don't know. He has two hammers and he's like super hyped up about like hitting this big gigantic bell, So he's like, he's ringing this bell and he's super excited about it. But the note that I wrote, I'm like, we've got starships and droids and all that, but we don't have any sort of automated bell system. Like
Thank
they still
you.
Have to pay some dude or whatever to be up in this bell tower, like actually manually hitting this.
I mean, props to Star Wars Quasimodo for going to town with the hammers. Yeah. But yeah, it seems like that's something you could automate.
Well, the thing I was thinking is right after that, you see Cassian's like friend come back from work and he's like unloading those gloves on the big glove wall. So I'm thinking maybe like whatever work he's doing, they get notified that it's like break time or something.
So that was going to be my question is what the heck is that bell system? Like, it's pretty
That's my only guess, anyway.
It's sort of like the alarm to let the guys know it's break time or quitting time.
That was my reasoning for that, but I don't have solid proof.
No, that's what I took out of it.
Do we know what type of work he does, or what's the deal with that glove?
No, and it's really intriguing. I wonder what the heck is up with the giant wall, like two walls full of like different kinds of gloves. They look like really heavy duty.
It's a crap load of gloves too. I was thinking, like, man, the costumer, I mean, they must've made 200-300 pairs of the, and all the gloves look totally different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all like pretty, like you said, they're heavy duty. So, I mean, like there was clearly a lot of work put into making all those gloves to hang on the wall.
All right. Not to overanalyze the gloves, but is there some sort of implication that the gloves are like company gloves and they can't take them with them home? Because I've kind of been wondering, why are they bothering to just hang the gloves on the wall there? They look significant. Isn't that something that someone might want to try and steal?
True. Yeah. They're kind of just, it seems like they're out in the open right there.
Huh.
Yeah. If they're that special, I don't know. That is. Yeah. I'm intrigued. I'll say that.
So after that, it cuts to the mechanic lady. What's her name? Bix. I think we determined last time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So she has a date with a guy. Was that Cassian's friend? Was that a different person?
No, it's a different person. Yeah.
Okay. So she's got a date with some guy, and she blows him off for another day. And then, she walks off screen, and her date like looks at her computer, and he sees a police notice.
Cassian's girlfriend's boyfriend seems kind of sus to me.
it just seemed kind of weird to me because like he shows up and he's like basically like, hey, do you want to go out tonight? And she kind of blows him off and he was like, and goes in the other room to change out of her work clothes or whatever. And then he's like, okay, well, hang on. I'm going to get on your computer and check your email or whatever. Like, he didn't just leave. He was like, hang on, let me check this.
But there was also that whole scene in the last episode where she walked out, or I forget if it was Cassian who had walked out or she had walked out, and he was trying to follow them through the alleys and stuff.
Oh, I missed that.
Like, interesting. Yeah, he seems like a jealous dude.
Yes. You know,
and he's heard reports, I think. Has he heard reports at this point of this guy, you know, making the rounds on the radios about like this fugitive?
I think this is the first time, because he sees it basically come up and say there's a Canarian guy who killed two cops, essentially. Yeah. So, I mean, he gets kind of that look in his eye like, oh, something's up. So I got the impression it was the first time he had seen that. Do we know who this guy is?
I don't have a name for him, no.
But I mean, he's just some random guy dating Bix.
I think he works with, with her. She just says that he'll do anything for her when he's talking to Cassian about him, because Cassian's questioning, like, you know, you haven't told him anything. And she kind of plays it off like he's just kind of in the palm of my hand. He'll do anything for me. Hmm. So
after that, it cuts to, I don't even know, like Cassian's grandma, like who's that old lady? Like she's basically talking to him about how, hey, she heard on the radio, like there's an APB out for somebody meeting your description from Canaria or whatever.
I looked it up. It's adoptive mother of Cassian.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, her name's Marva.
So I do want to, this was an interesting scene to me because it was once again, in my opinion, a great example of exposition through show, don't tell.
Oh, right.
Because we aren't introduced right away to her. He doesn't walk in the door and be like, hi, adopted mom, who I've lived in this house with for the last 10 years.
Right.
It's very much a natural, organic conversation, but you pick up on subtle cues that, okay, they care about each other. They're trying to lie to each other. They have a history of deception because they care. And then they talk about, you know, but they're family. And it's really just a great job of exposition. Like I said, their show, don't tell.
Actually, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, you're right. You do get all of that figured out, but they don't spoon feed it to you. You kind of have to read between the lines a little bit. The one thing I noted was the APB or whatever, the radio alert that's out, they know that Cassian killed these two cops, but they also know that he's Canarian. How do they know? Theoretically, the investigators know is that two cops were dead in an alley, right?
Well, because he was asking in that brothel about a girl from Canary. And so
you think they just backtracked from the brothel back from the and asked somebody in the brothel, like
he mentioned Canary. And my indication is that Canary is a very strange, unique, like off world. That's kind of, not many people would mention it, you know, if it wasn't significant. So I think the name coming up, is a big point in their investigation.
Okay. So it'd be like saying you're from Timbuktu. Like you'd be like, okay, that's kind of a weird thing to say. I'm going to remember that.
Or like from Malala.
Through the context of what we discover later about the planet, isn't it more like saying I'm from Chernobyl?
Well,
That comes later. Yeah.
Do we know, is the planet where the kids are, is that Canaria?
Yes.
Is it? Okay. All right. Well then, yes, you're right. It is Chernobyl.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
Got ahead of it a little bit, but yeah.
the next note that I wrote was that, so the little droid, the little red droid that Cassian bombs around with, his name is B2MO. And I don't know, I haven't looked it up, but I have to assume that B2MO is practical, that it's not CG, because it looks amazing. Like it behaves like Wally, like it has a personality and like it can move in all kinds of different ways, but at no point does it look like it's, you know, added in after the fact.
Yeah, it is a great design. It looks kind of like warped and beat up, and it does move naturally. Yeah, all the droids in Star Wars all have I'm hazard to guess any droids that I don't really admire in their design in Star Wars. So this is another one, I think. Yeah, but I actually want to go back to the Canary thing, because he mentions in the scene that he messed up. Like, that's kind of like, he's really upset about mentioning this Canary place. And I think what I'm getting is that not only is it a weird, unique place, but it's a place that something very bad happened, and there's like damage control happening. This corporation is trying to hide or cover tracks to this place. Yeah. And they're really, they don't want, there's something that they're trying to cover up, basically. So I think that's also a reason why this name is so infamous and is important. So.
Okay. Well, that sort of vibes with the Chernobyl thing that we're getting to later. So
yeah.
Okay.
What are your guys' thoughts on the overzealous company security inspector guy?
Yeah, that was one of the notes I wrote too. I'm like, that guy is going, he's taking that investigation to 11. It's like just two random cops that, you know, for all intents and purposes, weren't even that good of cops. Like, even that other guy was like, they were at a brothel, they weren't doing stuff they were supposed to be, like, just cover it up because we don't care. But that one, the you know, whatever, the Fallout guy is just going to town. I mean, it's like, you know, this murder is like the only thing important to him, which seems weird. I mean, there's got to be more to it, because he's way too enthusiastic about something that really shouldn't be that interesting.
You're talking about the deputy inspector.
Yes.
His name's Cyril Karn. It might be, I'm actually looking up these names because it might help, like, when we're talking about it. But yeah, he there is something weird about him, and it doesn't quite make sense. Yeah, why he's so into it. There is no explanation, and I think that's a good point. That might be on purpose. I would assume.
Well,
it's not just an oversight.
Yeah, it's coming up because the next scene is basically about him. So the investigator, I don't know what to call the guys that are the Fallout people. I'm going to call them investigators. So they're back, you know, wherever they are at their headquarters, and they get a 3D picture of Cassian, you know, so like pretty typical Star Wars, you get kind of the blue glowy 3D picture of Cassian's face. So now there's essentially like an APB out across a lot of people. A lot of people are looking for Cassian. Now they know what he looks like. And what's the Fallout guy's name? Would you say his name was? Cyril?
Cyril Karn, or you could call him Karn, because Karn's kind of memorable.
Karn calls another guy essentially in the middle of the night, and he was like, dude, you gotta get in here. This is important. Like, stop what you're doing and come in. We gotta go on this, you know, we're tracking this guy down.
I think I missed that. So he calls this guy, this like right hand man guy.
Yes. Yeah, he calls him in basically in the middle of the night. He was like, you know, I don't know what he says. He's like, I was sleeping or whatever. He was like, this is important. I had to bring you in. Like, it's serious. And I was like, I mean, again, just kind of goes to that guy's character if he really wants to catch Cassian. But, and so that, you know, they kind of have a back and forth, and they're explaining what's going on. And the, whatever the other guy's name was, he has this quote that I wrote down that says, the best way to keep a blade sharp is to use it. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Like, if you're worried about your blade being sharp, then don't use it. If you're talking about your mind, then maybe keep it sharp by using it, but not a blade. But that was his quote, because he's an idiot.
So I may have read a little bit too much into the dynamics of that situation, but what I took out of it was Cyril, what's his last name?
Karn.
Yeah. Cyril Karn is kind of like the green lieutenant. You know, he's an officer, so he's in charge, but doesn't exactly have a lot of field experience. And the guy who he brought in was like the seasoned sergeant, you know, who's.
Yeah, he definitely seemed green, especially in his speech later on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves again.
Yes. So at this point, we know that these investigators, they're ramping up. Like, we got a APB out. There's a lot of people involved looking. So Cassian's got to be on the run now. I mean, he knows that they're coming too. Mm-hmm. So it cuts to Cassian back in his ship. And previously, Bix has told him that the buyer for whatever ship part he has is on the way, and it's too late to cancel. It's like, you have to go get this part.
So he was confused about that. Why is it bad that, like, he's coming? Because it's too late to call him off. What does that mean?
I think he was trying to get off the planet, like, right away. He was like, look, I don't have time to wait for this. Like, I need to get moving right now. That was the way I interpret it, but I don't know.
And he was grabbing this thing from, like, this ship in the shipyard. And I was in the intro that he says what it is. And I, like, try to figure out what he's saying. He says it's an untraceable NS9 star Pathina. I think that's what he says, but I actually can't really understand what he's saying. So
I think it's pronounced, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's pronounced MacGuffin.
I have a feeling that it's whatever it is going to come back in the future. But the one thing that I thought was interesting was when he goes back to his ship to get it, like, he has this secret compartment that you literally have to punch the wall for it to pop out. Like, that's such a sweet trope. Like, oh, I've got this hidden compartment. If you just punch the wall in the right spot.
And then, yeah, I just wanted to note real quick on this. Like, he seems exasperated in this scene. Like, he just kind of slumps down. At this part, like, he's got, like, a second to rest, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Just kind of a cool moment. I don't know. But, yeah, keep going.
So he punches the wall, and the little box falls down, and you get, like, a slow close-up of it in his hands. It's probably about a foot square cube. And, again, we don't know what it is yet, but there's a very clear Empire insignia on it, which, I mean, just goes to the case that clearly he's smuggling all kinds of things. But there was very much a reveal of the Empire insignia on this box.
Is that what it was? They held on it for a few seconds.
Yeah, but... yeah, it's definitely an Empire insignia of some sort.
My guess, like, my initial just guess, is that it's something that lets you, it's like a security clearance type thing, maybe, that has, like, encryption codes or something that lets you bypass some sort of security within the Empire or their corporate, you know, like, maybe allowing you to perform transport in certain areas. I don't know. That's my guess, but it may be more important than that. Who knows? What do you guys think?
I think it's clearly they're setting it up to be something major.
I agree. I think it might be significant. It's definitely significant, at least to the plot. But I've really come to think of it in one of two terms, either a MacGuffin, because it's just there to advance the story, give him something that he can use to get off planet. Possibly he's going to lose it and have to find it, reclaim it, fight the inspector for it, something along those lines. Or if I think about it in more science fiction-y terms, I just think of it as the Interocitor.
it's interesting. This is the first, I mean, I guess maybe it's only the second real mention of the Empire. Like, there's no stormtroopers, there's no Jedi, there's no nothing, but you see an Empire logo. So we're definitely Star Wars adjacent here. We're getting closer, I think, to the rest of the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the next scene is another flashback, and the kids have now found the crashed ship, and they are sort of like circling around this crashed ship, which is down in this valley, and they have very primitive weapons. That's what I noted was, I mean, there's no lasers, there's no swords, there's no lightsabers, there's no droids. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're kids in the forest with sticks.
Yeah, there's a couple things I wanted to mention on this part. This, I don't know if we talked about, there's no subtitles for their language.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, yeah, some language that we're not supposed to understand. The outfits are kind of interesting. They seem like really I'm really like impressed with this, with the way it looks. They seem really grungy and like really dirty. Like they've been doing this a long time. They seem sweaty and gross.
But they all have the same type of clothes on. Like it's a uniform, like a school uniform or something.
Like they've been scrounged from like soldiers or maybe miners or something like that. You know? Yeah. Oh, they're not like a tribe. It seems like they've been scrounging this stuff from other modern sources. But yeah. And then the last thing is actually, I said in the last episode that they called Cassian Cassa, but that's wrong. It's Cassa is the leader girl in this kid tribe. Her name is Cassa.
So. Okay.
Too many Cassios and Cassins and whatever.
So there's just that one quick reveal. And then it cuts to, and this is completely, and I didn't fully understand this, but Stellan Skarsgård shows up. So he parks his ship, you know, like way up, like on this rocky ridge, like way away from the city. And he gets up, you know, gets out of his ship. And I couldn't tell if he had, does he have a cane?
Oh, it looked like a sword to me. But
at first I thought it was a sword, but then it sort of looked like a cane, but he's not Doug limping, knows. So.
The first thing that I thought it looked like is one of those like higher end toy lightsabers.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought. I'm like, he got, you know, a lightsaber at Comic-Con.
It didn't look like a light. It looked metal though.
No, it looked like one. Like I'm with Doug. Like it looked like one of those plastic lightsabers, and you hit the button, and then the LEDs turn on.
But yeah, for sure.
I disagree. Let's argue.
So, well, you're wrong, but I'm curious though. Like the way they introduced him, like we kept just seeing the back of him and the back of his head and stuff. And they waited a long time to actually like turn the camera and reveal him. And when they did, I was kind of sitting there going like, should I know who this is? Like as far as a Star Wars character?
This guy is from Dune. He's from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And this is Stellan Skarsgård.
No.
He's awesome. He's one of my favorite character actors.
Don't get me started. Stellan Skarsgård is amazing. Like, literally everything that guy has done is amazing. I mean, he's fantastic in... I'm totally drawing a blank. What's it called? Good Will Hunting. I mean, that was kind of like he first showed up. Anyway,
He was in that.
He's great. So anyway, he shows up and he's got a cane.
Is he on Ferrix? Like he landed on Ferrix, right? The one that's where Cassian is and everything?
Yes, I believe so.
It just looked different, but yeah.
It's not entirely clear, but that was the impression I got.
They didn't outright state it, but I'm kind of thinking he's probably the buyer.
Oh, that makes sense. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, if not, that's a pretty random character to introduce in a very mysterious way.
I just thought
maybe he was
involved with the investigation. Like he's the, you know, I don't know. Maybe he got the APB and, you know, Cassian killed his paw 10 years ago. So he showed up as like a samurai. I don't know. I guess
at this point, there's very little communicated about him at all. So
yeah,
it could be anything. But I think you're onto something, Doug. Yeah,
that would make sense.
Well, I mean, it was the lightsaber that gave it away.
The fake toy one.
So the only other thing he does is he gets out some binoculars and he zooms in and he looks at the city or the town or whatever. And that's it. So you see, that's his introduction. You know, it's maybe 20 seconds long.
Yeah.
There's another flashback of the kids. So the kids have now gone down into the valley and they're investigating the crashed ship. The ship is still smoking, so it's still relatively recent. There's essentially a dead guy hanging out of the ship, and the main girl walks over and pokes him with a stick, essentially. So, yeah, my notes for that scene was just the kids are poking the dead guys. And then one of the guys is apparently not dead, gets up and shoots Cassa, I assume, in the back.
Yeah, and did you notice they have, like, weird skin?
Yeah, they have green skin. Or
grayish. Yeah.
They look kind of like Hulk-like, which if we move forward a little bit, the very next thing they talk about what's going on in Canary and it being the exact words mm-hmm. were that I wrote were, because they describe what Kanari is and that it's a mid-rim planet and it's been abandoned after an imperial mining disaster and it's considered toxic. So it is essentially Chernobyl, right? So something happened, and that was why I thought those guys' faces were green, was they are just sick from whatever this toxic stuff is that's on Kanari.
Yeah, there's something crazy. That's the official story, though. I mean, I think there's probably something like a lot more to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead, Dan. So.
No, I was just going to say that's kind of what I gathered from it as well. Like, even upon the first sight of the bodies with the slightly yellowish skin, it didn't appear to be like, oh, that's a new alien race that they're introducing into the Star Wars. It appeared to be some sort of disease or sickness. And
they're humans, but yeah, they're sick.
But what doesn't make sense is if the planet makes you sick, this ship crash landing on the planet has these people being sick.
But the kids aren't sick, and they've been there the kids for a long are fine. Time. No. I got the impression that there's something on this ship, and that the ship, that maybe that's why the ship crashed, is that they're also sick on it. They couldn't pilot the ship. So I think that you were going to find out that there was something on the ship that maybe the Empire was trying to smuggle or something like that, and it went haywire and it crashed into this planet and basically ruined this planet. That's my guess.
That's a really good theory, and there may be some merit to that. My theory is that he is going to go onto the ship and find the Interocitor. Like, that's where he's going to find it, and it's something he's carried with him all these years or something like that.
Oh, okay. Mm. Interesting. That would make sense. That would also be why it's so valuable. Maybe it's like one of a kind.
Maybe.
So to get back to the plot a little bit, so they're poking dead guys. The one guy gets up, shoots the girl in the back, and then all of the other kids lose their minds and they start shooting like blow darts at the guy that just shot their friend. And dude, the guy like gets the crazy. I think there was like 25 darts in the guy, right? He gets completely outnumbered.
Are not like the most strongest weapon ever made.
They were pretty big. Like the darts that were sticking out of him were like a good 6-8 inches long. So they weren't tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like they shoot him with a bajillion darts and he does fall over and die. And then all the kids run over to Casa because they're all freaked out because she's hurt or probably dead is the way it looks. And then they all carry her away, right? Because they want to take her to a medic or whatever, right? The one thing I noted was that the kids did not take the gun that the guy shot Casa with. That would have been one of the first things I would have grabbed, right? Like, because they've got sticks and blow darts and whatnot. Like, if you want something to level the playing field, like maybe get that gun that just killed your friend.
Well, yeah, you raise an interesting point, because if they are the survivors of this disaster that occurred on the planet, conceivably there would have been blasters somewhere on the planet. Why didn't they find those and use those for survival?
Is something mysterious going on here? There's a lot of questions that I have, but yeah.
So the next scene is Cassian essentially I don't know what it is, like a taxi stand kind of thing, and he's talking to that guy and he says, I need to get to Tasser immediately and discreetly, and they negotiate a price, and it's a very high price. Apparently he started at 900 credits and got him down to 700 credits, which is apparently a ton of money, but he has to leave within the hour. He was like, you know, basically I got to get out of here because there's too much heat on this planet.
Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, oh, we're talking about like some reports about Kanari. You don't know anybody from Kanari, right? And
yeah.
He's like,
right.
No.
Never heard of it. Yeah.
What's a Kanari?
Yeah. But that's the character that says that Kanari was abandoned after an imperial mining disaster and is considered toxic. So that's the show, not tell. I guess in that case it is tell, but it was organic. It wasn't like, here, let me explain to you the planets in this system.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they negotiate a price of 700 bucks or whatever, 700 credits. And Cassian says, okay, basically I don't have a choice. Like, let's do it. We got to leave within the hour. And then it cuts and there is now, it cuts back to the investigators and they're back on their ship or their planet, wherever.
This was actually one of my favorite scenes this episode.
And there's a major task force now, right? So to capture Cassian, there's now, what, there's like 25 guys, 20 guys. Like, this has escalated seriously, right?
Yeah.
And one of them is John C. Reilly.
Oh, it was, really?
No, it wasn't really, but it was some dude who looked a lot like John C. Reilly.
Was there anything else going on in this scene? I didn't take much else away from that, except that now they have a bunch of people.
Oh, I picked up on a lot of subtext with Cyril Karn. I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but the fact that he is just terrible at giving the inspirational speech, and it actually comes across like he's nervous, he's scared, like his whole focus of the speech is, we'll get through this okay. And the rest of them are kind of looking at each other like, what the hell is this dude talking about? Of course we're going to be okay. But it really, to me, kind of drew this picture of a young leader who has something to prove, but is terrified, but feels like he has to compensate for that insecurity. And maybe that's why he's dog on a bone to go get Cassian. And like, I got to solve this murder to prove that I'm worthy of being a leader. And
Would that make sense? Because his boss told him not to do this.
Right.
That was going to be my next question, was he has put a ton of time and effort and people on this thing that his boss basically told him to sweep under the rug. Where's his boss?
Yeah. Doesn't he have to get approval for assembling a squad? Like,
yeah.
No, because his boss left to go do the conference with the Empire.
So he just has carte blanche because his boss is on PTO.
I mean, it doesn't seem like he's talking to anybody that's above his rank, so they all have to follow his orders.
Huh. Yeah, this was a telling scene for Karn. He was nervous to make this sort of speech half-hearted, like rah-rah, let's emphasize the morality and what did he say? Like, inaction is the worst thing you can do, or something like that. And the guys were like, slow clapping, like, yeah, all right.
Sure, whatever, dude. We've been doing this for 10 years. We're good.
And his assistant's like, yeah, go get him, Sard, whatever.
Yeah, it was a little cringy to watch, but I think. And maybe I'm reading way too much into his character, but I thought it was pretty revealing about who he is.
I'm tempted to really try to read into him because there's like a lot missing, really. Like, the more I see of him, the more I'm like, what's going on? Like, what are his motivations and stuff? Because, like, if he was just sort of like, rah, rah, we got to get this guy, then you would think he'd be able to make a speech like that, or at least, explain the situation of these guys trying to convince him. And he was talking to his assistant in the same way, like, yeah, we got to do this. So I guess maybe he's just socially awkward, but I don't know.
Also like clearly super excited to go after Cassian.
Yeah.
There's more there. Something. It's just kind of like you said, it's just kind of weird. He's very enthusiastic, but he's also really green. So.
Yeah, so at this point, I'm actually kind of wary of this character, whether it's the writing or it's just the way they've presented him, and it'll pay off.
Yeah,
is to be seen. I haven't seen the third episode yet. So,
anything else on the task force scene?
Not so much the task force, and I don't want to derail things here, but I think Jason touched on it just a little bit. In the sense that it is good writing, that it's got you hanging on all of these little details, like looking, you're really attentive to these characters to try and glean information about who they are, what their motivations are. That's really good writing, interesting writing.
To yeah, me, anyway. Right.
Yeah, because all the other characters, or like most of the characters, I'm getting a really good sense of. And this lieutenant is really coming off very strange to me. And so it makes me wonder, in a normal show, like in a subpar show, I'd be like, okay, this character is just not written very well. Because I'm getting conflicting actions and stuff. But in this show, I'm actually... Well, I'm on the fence, so we'll see.
I mean, I know you're not a fan of this writer, but I think he's doing well.
He's a green writer. This is one of his first major shows, so Nuge, we'll see. Let's give him time.
Nuge hates this guy. He's the same guy that wrote Rogue One.
All right, yeah. we got one scene left. So the last scene is we're back to Stellan Skarsgård. And now he's on what is essentially a bus, a shuttle. I think an airport shuttle. Like it's picked up a couple other passengers from wherever they were, and they're getting, from what I can tell, they're getting bussed into the city, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's not much to the scene, really.
No. He has this conversation with this other, or the other guy strikes up a conversation with him, and he's basically complaining about parking fees. He's like, I had to park my ship here and it cost me 50 credits, right?
Yeah.
And then they're looking out the window and they're talking about the planet, and the quote that the other guy says is, if you can't find it here, it's not worth finding.
Yeah. So
I don't know what that really means. Just that, you know, whatever planet they're on, there's a lot of stuff there. Like it's a shopping mall. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, they cut from that line, like that conversation ends on the, if you can't find it here, it's not worth finding. And then they cut from that to a shot of Cassian.
It cuts from that to a view out the window, I thought was
that. Yeah, it does show like a kind of a condensed city area. It does cut to Cassian.
It shows an extremely dense set of buildings. Like it looks like India, or it looks like, you know, like it's really, really dense.
Right. Yeah.
When he says, if you can't find it here, it's not worth finding. And that just shows like this really, you know, dense area of buildings. And then it cuts to Cassian essentially walking through the street, and then it star wipes and that's it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Ferrix, I think, you know, it's a free trade area. I didn't take much from this. Like, it's like, okay, you can find stuff here. And Stellan Skarsgård is, you know, pretty shy. He's coy. Doesn't like talking to people. That's what I got. So, yeah.
That's it. That's the episode.
Rating out of 10, Nuge.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to give it a little bit lower just because I didn't get much from this. It seems like kind of like a builder episode. And I think there's a reason they released all three of these at once. So, you know, I'm going to go with like 7, you know, out of 10, just because there wasn't a lot going on.
Doug?
I feel like I'm just copying Jason at this point, because I was kind of feeling the same. Like this was another episode without a lot of action. It's intriguing. There's definitely some interesting characters in this, and I want to find out what happens. But I'm losing patience and I need some action.
Well, I've heard extremely good things about the third episode. A guy I respect online wrote, the third episode of Andor might very well be my favorite Star Wars thing since I saw the original movies.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I've got really high hopes for the third episode. So I guess we'll see. I got 6 out of 10. It was okay. A lot more setup. Ask me after episode 3.
All right.
All right. I think that's it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Logic gate out.
Excellent.